What is up? Welcome to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd and my co-host, Canucks Insider Thomas Drantz here. Drantzer, of course, also covers the team for The Athletic. Canucks Talk is brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at DLEAMC.com. We're live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. So much to get into today, Drantz, including you doing your best Rick Dhaliwal tribute and housing a banana moments before we come on air to start the show.
Needed it. I needed it. It's been, you know, it's one of those days where I'm like, and then I'll make myself lunch, and then I'll come to work,
and
then
it's
like,
happens.
Well, no, and then it's like Dakota Joshua signs, and then I've got multiple phone calls to make and an article to write and on, and then I'm rushing, scraped the side of my car in our wildly poorly laid out parking lot.
Yeah,
and
it's
then,
not ideal.
And then housed a banana so that I wasn't grumpy for the program. You're welcome.
This is a criticism.
This is service to you, my friend. Otherwise, I'd be like, Jamie, your takes.
You're right. I've never done a show with Grumpy Drantz before.
Your takes, terrible.
Trust me. I'm quite fine doing a show with Grumpy Drantz. All right. We got a lot to get into. Since we signed off 22 hours ago yesterday.
Do you remember we said the Canucks were like the guy in the fight?
Yes.
He's not doing anything.
So true.
And then, nailed it.
Then they did a bunch of stuff.
They did a bunch of stuff.
So since we signed off, the Canucks re-signed Teddy Bluger, two-year 1.8 AAV deal to come back.
Convinced him to take a pay cut.
Yep.
Okay. And this is like the only, Bluger was like the only defensive ace, PK ace center headed for market. And the Canucks had him take a pay cut in exchange for an additional year of security. A wildly team-friendly outcome, especially given the dearth of options, poised to hit the open market at pivot. In unrestricted free agency.
Then they traded Ilya Mikheyev.
You do this, I'm just going to jump in and
annotate. That's fine. Well, and we'll do quick
annotations.
The Mikheyev
one requires more.
Yeah. Then, last night, they traded Ilya Mikheyev, retaining 15% of his salary, to Chicago, along with a second-round pick in 2027. Also, and this was an interesting part of the deal, unrestricted free agent Sam Lafferty's rights go to Chicago. They get a 2027.
Why is that interesting?
It's just like,
it's bizarre.
Yeah, that's what I mean. You don't see a lot of Sam Lafferty-esque UFAs get their rights traded.
Yeah.
Anyways, they get a 2027 fourth round pick back. So they basically trade down from the second to the fourth round in 2027.
In 2027.
And they clear $4 million of cap space because they're retaining 15% of the Mikheyev's deal.
What are we even doing here?
Home run for Chicago, baby.
What are they doing?
I don't get. Also, it's so funny because the price can be set for cap space, it seems like. For example, in the Jake Walman to San Jose deal, and then this is a completely different price for a very similar amount of cap space.
Well, and San Jose, according to Elliot Friedman, was the other team in the deal, presumably willing to do something very, very similar.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think what it reflects more than anything is also the value of the player, and, you know, I think Chicago, maybe San Jose, viewed Mikheyev as usable, right? And so this is the thing, right? Understanding this from Chicago's perspective is, if you are looking at your options and you're Chicago and you know that anyone you sign, you're going to have to pay the bad team tax to sign, right? The opposite force, by the way, working in Vancouver's
favor. Of what
we're
seeing for the Canucks right
as
now.
As they get team-friendly deals done with some key glue guys here. You look at Mikheyev and you probably think to yourself, you know, if he were available on July 1, would we pay him 2 times 3.5? 2 times 3.
Mm.
And they're probably thinking to themselves, yes. So, if you're willing to do that, why wouldn't you accept a second-round pick for an additional $500K in cap space for 2 years, right? I mean, it's a free second-round pick for a guy you probably would sign anyway to a similar number to what you're going to get him at after the Canucks retain free assets, and we get Sam Lafferty's signing rights for some reason. Okay, so I get it.
I hope they really ground the Canucks down on that. Like, this deal's not happening unless you throw those rights in.
We're walking away! Anyway. So that I get it from Chicago's perspective. And especially when you've got multiple potential bidders in the pool, as was clearly the case with Mikheyev, you're not going to grind them out for like an additional fifth round pick or whatever, because you don't want to risk losing what you see as a square deal for yourself. So I get all of that. What I don't quite understand, okay, is that Like, why would you let a team like Vancouver, a 50-win team that won their division, off of the mat, cap-wise, for the benefit of a pick to select, like, a 14-year-old? Like, those kids are 14 right now.
Well,
it's Landon DuPont's draft class, Jamie.
He's not dropping, though.
No, no way he's going to be in the second round. But like,
I think,
honestly,
I think the answer to your question is, because I get it, right? And this happens all the time. And even with teams with,
well,
you know,
especially
better
with Chicago, who I don't think has appropriately valued their cap space over the last 2.5 years. Like, with the exception of the DeBrincat deal, which I liked, everything else has, I think you've seen the seams of real inexperience from that front office to the benefit of the Canucks. You know, the Dickinson trade actually worked well for Chicago, but the Beauvillier trade was wild. Just like a gift to Vancouver at the price point they paid. Actually, they paid for Beauvillier, and I think they ended up getting the pick back. But it's like, what do you, you couldn't find a smarter way to use $4 million in cap space in season than not even netting a fifth round pick in and out? Like, what are we talking about? That's hapless stuff.
Well,
and then this is wild. Like, this is, as you know me, trading a second round pick to get out of your own contractual mistake, a wildly predictable contractual mistake, in my opinion, because we can do the injury context thing on Mikheyev. But here's the truth. Here's the truth. I buy that Mikheyev will bounce back in terms of his, like, speed, maybe his two-way impact, and his defensive play. I think if you're betting on, as the Canucks did in the summer of 2022, Mikheyev being the type of producer who can actually complement skilled players in the top six, I think you're out to lunch. Like, I think that's a bet that's never going to pay off. And if you can't complement skilled players at $4.75 million, you're never living up to that contract, even if your form rebounds. And I buy that it will in terms of the defense. But the vision, the hands, that's not connected to the knee.
No.
Like, I'm sorry. It's just not. So, you know, I don't think Mikheyev, even at four, is a worthwhile bounce back bet for Chicago, which colors my take here. I just think we've seen pretty consistently from that Blackhawks front office, you know, a poor ability to evaluate the value and extract value from surplus cap.
Well, and I will say, even with Jason Dickinson, right, being the one that worked, I mean, it's not like they then flipped him for a big return, right? They signed him. They gave him a new deal. You think of the kind of...
It's going to be a sick checking line with him, Lafferty, and Mikheyev,
it
though.
It actually is, though.
The ex-Canucks line.
Jason Dickinson and Ilya Mikheyev lockdown defense. You think of, like, the quintessential taking on a inefficient contract as a rebuilding team move. And I think of Montreal, right? Getting the first round pick to take Sean Monahan, then flipping him for a first round pick. Like, Chicago hasn't done that next part. They got Jason Dickinson. They helped him rebuild his value, but then they just kept him in a deal that probably won't help move the needle for them anyway going forward. And to your question of why do they let the Canucks kind of off the mat? Why do they let them out of these problem contracts? I think the answer is simply that Chicago is looking far enough down the road that they don't see themselves competing with the Canucks, right? They're not worried about helping the Canucks compete for a Stanley Cup over the next two or three seasons because they see their horizon farther down the road than that. Now, you can critique that approach, but I think that ultimately answers it. They don't really care if the Canucks are going to get a lot better in the near term as a result of this deal because they're looking, you know, 2, 3, 4 years down the road.
Yeah, and I get it, but, like, the thing is you've also helped them down the road. You know what I mean? Like, you've also helped them down the road because they're going to have, like, here's the real value for the Canucks in that absolute steal, the most painlessly structured cap dump and the most complicated that I've ever seen. The real value of that, of keeping that, like, 2025 second and instead dealing the 2027 second is, you know, Vancouver doesn't have a lot of assets.
Yeah.
Especially because my understanding from talking to people and calling around the league, like, I still think the Volander, Lekaramäki, Elias Pettersson, basically untouchable, like, no, we're not going to do that as a first blush reaction from the Canucks. It, like, I still think that's stable. That's how this team is regarding its own prospects. So what do you have to trade if you don't land the marquee free agent on July 1? Like, how do you win the bidding for Nikolaj Ehlers? How do you win the bidding for XYZ star player that may shake loose? 2025 first, 2025 second, like, those are your bullets. A 2027 second is far less appealing as an asset to everybody. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, that is going to help the Canucks even in the future, right? The fact that they're going to have this asset weaponry and this additional flexibility. At some point, you got to get more for your cap space than Chicago pretty consistently has over the course of the last 2 years through the darkest days of their rebuild. And two, you know, I think you still have to be competitive. You know, I don't think their front office has leapt over that bar with the favors they're continually doing for the Canucks. Hey, credit Patrick Alvin and company. Mm-hmm. That's as well-structured, well-thought-out, painless a cap dump deal to get off of a self-inflicted error as I've ever seen. And, you know, I think it sets things up nicely for the next week.
Yeah, last night I really felt like they were getting their ducks in a row, and then we've started to see, I think, some of the fruits of that already today, because the other big piece of business that the Canucks have got done in the last 24 hours, just announced about a couple of hours ago, re-signing forward Dakota Joshua to a four-year deal with a 3.25 AAV, and obviously not taking a pay cut. We knew that wasn't in the cards for Dakota Joshua, but I think certainly it's fair to say less money than he would have got on the open market if he had waited until Monday to see what was out there. And the Canucks take care of, you know, a guy who was a big part of their team, played top 6 minutes for them in the playoffs, and keep Dakota Joshua in-house. And by the way, you factor that into the Teddy Bluger re-signing, and they have the three members of the third line that was so productive and so effective for them its first stretches last year, all under contract going into next season as well now.
Yeah, so it's interesting. This one seems to track that it's like Canucks create the cap space from the Mikheyev trade and then move to get Joshua done. But I think a little bit more counterintuitively, my understanding is that what really moved this morning and late last night was a decision from the player, Dakota Joshua, to get the deal done. Right? Now, That's not to say that Joshua's side necessarily caved or what have you. Like, I think there was definitely, you know, 15 and a half, 16 million total value contracts out there for Joshua if he'd gotten to July 1. I had an industry source suggest to me that $4.5 million was not outside the question if a bidding war had opened up around a guy with some unicorn player traits, right? 6'2", 200 plus pounds. That's rare already for a winger, especially one that scores or produces the way Joshua has the last two seasons. He's got almost 30 goals. Prorated last year, he was a 40-point guy, a 20-goal-plus guy. But, you know, of course, he missed a bunch of games due to injury because he fought. And that's part of his value, too. He's a top-10 NHL hitter. He led the playoffs in hits while the Canucks were still alive. Played top 6 minutes in the playoffs. Has developed into an excellent penalty killer. I mean, you go down the list of things this guy does well, right? And then you compare it with the list of things to be concerned about with Joshua. It's like, you know, even someone saying something like career fourth liner about Joshua, it's like he has spent way more time as a middle six guy at this point in a relatively shallow NHL track record than he has as a fourth liner. That's what you want. You want to see a guy who shows up and immediately keeps earning opportunity, keeps nailing, you know, the chances he gets, keeps improving in various areas of his game. So anyway, what happened here in particular is Joshua wanted to stay. And that's what happened with Bluger too.
Yep.
Whether it was the city, the relationship with teammates, the sense of building something, the opportunity that he felt confident he'd continue to get, the impact of Rick Tocchet, but also Yogi Shevkovsky on his game, the confidence that he'll continue to develop in Vancouver, that all played a role. You know, I think there were iterations of this deal. Like, I think Joshua's camp really wanted 4 years, so I think the Canucks probably gave a little bit there. And Joshua, I think, left a fair bit of, you know, AAV money, like in terms of total money, on the table to remain in a place that he's comfortable with. That's kind of where we get to this point, you know, in line with something we've been talking about for weeks, which is, to a man, Zadorov, Myers, Dakota Joshua, Teddy Bluger wanted to be here.
Mm-hmm.
And to a man, in negotiations, the Canucks have been very careful about making offers commensurate with what all of those players could have expected if they hit the open market. And now we're down to Zadorov and Myers, and we'll sort of see if the club can keep taking advantage of this dream season to get deals with pending UFAs done efficiently. All of that said, when the club cleared up that money in the Mikheyev deal, my understanding is that for Canucks hockey operations internally, it wasn't excitement that we now have space to go get Joshua done or Myers done or Zadorov done, although that was part of it. It really was, we're going to have a lot of flex now on July 1. There's a lot of excitement about the players poised to be available on July 1 for this Canucks team. And I think that's where their eyes remain trained while still being open to returning their own guys at price points that they're comfortable with.
And that makes sense, because if you've been very disciplined about having a certain valuation attached to your internal free agents, right? Like, hey, we love these players, but we love them at this number. We really don't want to go higher. That valuation is not necessarily going to change just because you opened up an extra $4 million of cap space, right? And again, you know, they easily could have brought back all of Joshua, Zadorov, and Myers without making the Ilya Mikheyev move. It's not as if they needed to do that in order to bring back all of those guys. It's just you wouldn't have been able to do anything else really big on top of that, right? Like, that would have been taking up all of your flexibility. So I think now, having done Bluger and Joshua, the way I look at it is that they have, one, as you say, brought back some crucial glue guys, and especially if Joshua had left, they would have really been looking for that physicality in the bottom six, or at least in the middle six, and the potential to even play up the lineup. We can get into that more at some point, right? How much growth is there left in Joshua's game? If they hadn't brought Bluger back, they would have been looking for penalty killing, depth down the middle. So they've kind of solidified some of the floor, right? The floor isn't going to fall out completely from, you know, that part of the roster and what made them successful. But they've left themselves the flexibility to go chase the ceiling, right? They can still go do Jake Guentzel. They still have a lot of flexibility to do other things. And the downside isn't quite as scary now, because it's not you're losing four or five guys, right? It's maybe you're losing two or three if things don't play out in the ideal way.
Yeah, nearly $18.5 million remains. So there's a fair bit that the club can still accomplish. Joshua, to me, is an interesting one because it's a floor bet in some ways, but I actually think there's a straightforward path. I've been making this argument for a couple months to mining actual surplus value, especially at a $3.25 million valuation, right? Joshua's now like the 163rd highest paid forward. So low end, second line, really it's like solid middle six money. But he played top 6 minutes for this Canucks team last season. He barely played on the power play. I think it's very, very straightforward to understand how his skill set, that touch in tight, his ability to excel on retrievals, the big frame to screen goaltenders, could potentially work at the net front. It's something, now that he's been paid, that I hope we see more frequently next season, because, you know, honestly, one thing I think the Canucks need is a lefty for PP1. Right, like a lefty to play and sort of interchange between the net front and the you know, middle distance, the bumper spot with Brock Besser. He's the guy. He's the guy you should try there. We saw a little too much Pugh Suter there. We saw some Garland there, which is fine. But I do want to see what it looks like with Joshua. I think there's a really straightforward path to him providing more upside. And even if he doesn't, even if he just, you know, regresses as a shooter, shoots like 13%, 14%, is more like a 35-point guy, but continues to be a good penalty killer and, you know, play second line or third line minutes and help drive play and partner well with Garland. I mean, even if that's what you're getting, that's going to pay off 3.25. And those are my favorite types of bets, the ones where you're counting on the base rate, but there's a really straightforward, super realistic path to him providing more value. Really, the only thing that I think is worth sort of pouring cold water on in terms of the risk of this deal is the fourth year, right? Team wanted AAV more than anything. Like, they wanted to manage the annual average value of the deal, consistent with what we know about this team and their ambitions and their desire to level up this club to be a real contender next season. But that fourth year, just because of Joshua's profile, right? That there are players for whom I think you want to trade term for AAV. Mm-hmm. Zadorov's an example for me, given the track record of giant defensemen. And there's players for whom I think you should be willing to pay more money to in exchange for restraining the term. And for me, Joshua's sort of the latter agreement. Don't believe that discussions ever really focused on this particular issue, but for a player like Joshua who hits a lot and gets hit a lot, I do worry a little bit, even though he's got a relatively shallow NHL track record, you know, about how his game ages, right? Like, one thing Joshua does at an exceptional level is chase down defenders, close as the F1 on the forecheck. Well, you lose a step, you lose that part of your game, you can't get there to play the physical part of your game. What else is connected to that that sort of begins to lose some of the oomph that the Canucks have got from Joshua over the past 2 years? This, again, has nothing to do with the player himself. It's just we've seen repeatedly over NHL history that players of this type, the age curve can be a little steeper and come a little sooner for players of that variety. So the fourth year, I do think, is a material risk. As much as I think this is, you know, a solid stand-up double for Canucks management, another in a series, like a solid rally. They're off to a solid rally to begin this inning,
yes,
right?
For sure.
At the very least, it's like the Joshua deal, I think, cashes in at least a run.
Yeah.
You've got runners on second and third.
For sure, yeah. The bases are, there's ducks on the pond to bring in, for sure.
They're,
right?
they're in a good spot, okay? But I do think there is at least some material risk here, just given the length of the deal and Joshua's play style.
And I think ultimately, like, there's risk in the Mikheyev move too, right? Because you're trading down. It's another second round pick out the door. But again, once
I see no risk there.
Well, no, of course it's risk. Anytime you're giving up a second round pick, there's risk. But it's risk that makes sense because they've started down this path. And once they've started down, it would not make sense to all of a sudden be like, oh no, we can't. We got to keep that 2027 second round pick. You got to send it out to keep building this team. I think it's the same thing with giving Joshua a fourth year. Yeah, there's risk, but it's risk you have to accept to put the team in the best position over the next couple of seasons.
There's risk, but I don't draw a straight line because at the very least, there's so much thought and so much effort and so many silly moving pieces. Like, let me put it this way. I think the Mikheyev trade is a squirrel trade. And by that, I mean that the Canucks have sent Chicago a rodent and Chicago was so focused on the bushy tail that they valued it like something else. You know, and you know, so if you're clearing an $8 million salary liability from a player that was never
from the second to the fourth round,
that was never going to be worth the $4.75 million, like even if they bounce back, is not going to be at that value level. And you're deferring your payment four drafts from now. I mean, sure. Look, is there always some cost associated? Absolutely.
But the Gavin McKenna draft. Seriously.
I know. At some point, if you're paying that, like, at some point, if you're paying pennies on the dollar, you just do it.
Yeah.
And is there some risk? Yeah, but who cares? That Mikheyev deal, that's a Houdini act for the ages. Well, again, How often do you think I'll come on when a team trades overpriced UFA mistake that was evidently a mistake on day one and has to throw in a second round pick to get off that deal? How often am I going to come in and be like, great, steal of a trade?
Not often.
That's just not how I think. But that one is structured in such a way where that's just the fact of the matter. That deal's a steal.
All right, 650, 650.
They should go to jail. Someone call the cops.
650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Now, Brendan Batchelor joins us next. Lots going on with the Canucks right now, so we'll get Batch's thoughts on all of that coming up next here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650 with Jamie Dodd and Thomas Drance live here from the Kintec studio. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Dunbar Lumber with three stores to serve you in Ladner on Bridge Street or Dunbar Lumber Express at Ladner Center or Arbutus in Vancouver online at dunbarlumber.com. A flurry of Canucks moves over the past 24 hours or so. Joining us now to talk about that and look ahead to the draft and free agency, he is the play-by-play voice of the Canucks here on Sportsnet 650, our guy Brendan Batchelor. Batch, what's going on, man?
Not much. How are you guys?
Yeah, we're doing well. I'm enjoying all the activity. Lots of stuff to dig into from the Canucks, and I'm sure more to come in the next few days as well. So let's start with the big news from today, which is Dakota Joshua re-signing with the team just a few days ahead of unrestricted free agency. 4-year deal, $3.25 million AAV. How big is it for the Canucks to lock up Dakota Joshua, especially at this number, before he had a chance to test unrestricted free agency?
Yeah, I think it's a tremendous win for the organization. Both the Mikheyev move last night in tandem with the Joshua signing, and I think we have to talk about them together because I think one was probably only possible because of the other in terms of their cap situation and the flexibility they want to have going into July 1st and free agency on Monday, but to get Joshua back, and yeah, maybe the term's a little bit long, but at that cap hit at $3.25 million, that's significantly less than I think any of us expected him to get on the open market. Correct me if I'm wrong. So the fact that they can bring him in, they can keep that cap hit low so that it allows him to be a part of this contention window that they have right now, which, depending on your view of where this team is going, could be a long window or could be a shorter one, or right around that 3 or 4 year mark in terms of how long he's going to be under contract with this team. But, you know, in terms of pushing their chips in and trying to contend right now, not just having Joshua back, but having Joshua back at that number, having Bluger back at the number that they signed him to, and, you know, potentially being able to reunite those two guys with Connor Garland on that third line that drove play for them so well this season is a huge win. And it's, these are the little edges that you carve out further down your roster that make a big difference when the rubber meets the road at key times in the year. Because if you have inefficient contracts down your lineup, and we've seen that with the Canucks in the past decade, it can really hamper your ability to improve your team in the areas that you need to. So, you know, solidifying some forward depth, doing it at a relatively, you know, team-friendly number for both Bluger and Joshua now allows them more flexibility to go big game hunting on Monday, which is going to be exciting.
One of the other interesting parts about this deal for Dakota Joshua is, you know, we saw him all year, but then especially in the playoffs, he took on a much bigger role for the team, really playing top 6 minutes, obviously had some big moments in the playoffs as well. And I'm curious to see how much more room for growth there is with Dakota Joshua. Obviously, he's not young, but his pro career had such a weird start, you know, where he didn't really make it full-time to the NHL until he was here in Vancouver. How much more growth do you see for Joshua potentially? And could part of that be getting more reps on the power play with this team?
Yeah, it certainly could. You know, the one thing I think of when I see Joshua signing here and you know, taking a lesser number, I guess you could say, than what he could have got on the open market, although locking up the term, which is nice for him, I'm sure, to sort of have that comfort and security, is he understands, I would assume, that this was a very good situation that he was put in, and that not all situations are going to be like that. To have a coach that believes in you and trusts you and deploys you in the way that Rick Tocchet has done is not something that comes around every day. To have line mates that you have chemistry with, like the chemistry that Joshua and in particular Connor Garland have together, is not something that comes around every day. And having a chance to be on a team that has an opportunity to win is not something that comes around every day. And those are all the boxes that get ticked here for Joshua in terms of staying in a place where he's trusted, where he's been given a role, as you allude to, a situation where he may even get a more increased role in terms of some special teams deployment, depending on what we see the Canucks do in free agency and who else they bring in that, you know, could be a help on that power play. But, you know, he was a key penalty killer for them as well. He's played big shutdown minutes. He was crucial for them in the playoffs and scored some very big goals. So, you know, you stay in an environment like that, and I don't know if I want to say the sky is the limit, because that might be too strong, but there is a lot of opportunity for you to grow your role and grow your level of impact and grow your production too. So those are all reasons why Canuck fans should be excited that Joshua is back. And I'm sure that's a big factor in why he ultimately decided to do this deal now and not go to unrestricted free agency.
Are you on team Ilya Mikheyev will bounce back?
Yeah, I think so. I guess it depends, like, to what degree you're expecting a bounce back. Like, that's the funny thing about Mikheyev is, for a large portion of this season, he was on pace for a career year offensively in terms of production. And, you know, ultimately he goes on the long goal drought, you know, doesn't really play a big factor late in the second half of the season. And I think Patrick Alvin's assessment at the end of season press conference, when he said, you know, it's my fault that we were needing Ilya to play a bigger role than he probably should have, not Ilya's, is probably a fair assessment in saying that, you know, because they didn't have the forward depth, he was playing in a role that may not have been best suited for him to have success. But when you have the tools that he has, most notably the speed, When you have another off season to recover from the knee surgery that you had and you know, get in the gym and train, it wouldn't surprise me at all if Mikheyev has a good year in Chicago, especially because he's going to get opportunity, I would imagine. And, you know, I guess I'm speaking out of both sides of my mouth when I say that part of the reason he struggled here was because, you know, the role he played was not ideal for him. And yet there's a very real possibility that he plays up the lineup on a Chicago Blackhawks team that won't be very good again. But, you know, I think there is a chance for him to have a bounce back year and produce more offensively. And, you know, the Blackhawks must as well for them to bet on him like this and be willing to make the deal that they did with the Canucks.
Is it hard to call the games without watching them, Batch?
What do you mean?
No, sorry. Just my take on your Mikheyev take. I was just making fun of you.
Which part of it?
No. Playing up lineup. God, my eyes are bleeding just thinking about it.
Well, you mean in Chicago or the role he had here in Vancouver?
Anywhere. I'm like Sam Neill in Event Horizon, just like tearing my eyes out.
That was a rough one, man. That was a harsh one. To our guy, Batch.
Well, I wouldn't have done it to someone who's not my guy.
That's true.
We're co-hosting like all next week too. So he'll have his chances.
I'll have plenty of opportunity to get my own back. Just you wait, baby.
All right. The other deal that got done for the Canucks yesterday, Teddy Bluger, a 2-year deal, actually takes a very, very slight pay cut, but gets that extra year of security. Goes from a 1.9 AAV last year to 1.8 the next 2 years. And you know, this deal, not the most glamorous deal, obviously. Like, he wasn't in, I think, from a fan's perspective, that Zadorov or Joshua tier where there was such an appetite to go bring him back. But, you know, I also look at the other center options that are going to be out there. And if he hadn't re-signed, it could have been pretty dicey for the Canucks. Now I look at it, and if training camp rolls around and their depth chart at center is Miller, Pettersson, Bluger, Suter, Amon, I'm not going to say that's a home run. I'm not going to say that they don't want to still tinker with that during the season, but I think you can live with that at least to start the season. And I think that takes a lot of pressure off what they do down the middle in the next few days here.
Well, I mean, they did live with that until the All-Star break this past year, and it worked out pretty well for them, I think you could argue, in terms of the situation they put themselves in. So yeah, those guys are capable, and you know, I'll be interested to see where Bluger ultimately fits, because you know, he talked about it yesterday, and I agree with him that he played some of his best hockey on that Joshua Garland line. But if they have the chance to upgrade at center, you know, is there a more offensively impactful guy they could bring in that spot? I think that's certainly a possibility, although there may not be a lot of names that fit that bill on the open market heading into free agency. But does it make sense for Bluger to fit there, or can Pugh Suter go in there, because he had some good minutes with those guys too? Either of those guys can be a third line center. They both provide solid depth. They both provide intangibles that were a big part of the success that this team had last season. So I agree, you know, could that center ice group be better? Certainly it could. But if those are the four guys in Suter, Bluger, Pettersson, and Miller, they're going to be skating down the middle on night one in October, then I'm okay with that at least early in the year. And then, hey, maybe if you're in a good situation, you have a chance to go out and make another trade similar to the Lindholm deal prior to the deadline next year. But Bluger showed his worth in his first year in Vancouver, and ultimately I think is very deserving of the 2-year term in coming back, and is a key depth piece for this team. That I was on the morning show with the guys earlier this week, and Bruff asked me who was going to be the depth centerman for the Canucks. And I talked about how I was actually kind of surprised that it had gotten this late with Teddy Bluger. So I was really relieved to see that they got that deal done. And at the very least, they can feel comfortable about their center ice depth options going into the season.
Moving forward, right? So from this moment where the Canucks have traded Mikheyev and extended Bluger and extended Joshua, what should this organization, what should this team's top priorities be in your eyes for the next 72 hours?
Free agency, you mean?
Including free agency. So like Tuesday, we wake up Tuesday, what would you like to have seen the Canucks accomplish?
Top six winger. One at least, if they can find a way to fit a couple in there, that would be great. you know, I think at this point, and, you know, correct me if you think I'm wrong, or, you know, maybe I'll say this and then in 10 minutes they'll announce the opposite. But I think Joshua coming back in this situation means that Zadorov is probably going to market at this point, just because of some of the cap flexibility you think they'd want to have to go and chase someone like Gensel or, you know, Toffoli as a backup option if they can't do that. Or, you know, why not both? Let's have fun at this time of year and imagine the possibilities. But that to me is the biggest key, because, you know, assuming they extend Tyler Myers here at some point, which I'm also kind of surprised it's gotten this late into June with them not doing that. You know, the more pressing need is up front. The more pressing need is a running mate for Pettersson. The fact that you've got Hronek under contract now, you know, Hughes is coming back, you know, Soucy's coming back. If you bring Myers in, Soucy and Myers were sort of a good solid second pairing for this team this past season. And then you can fill out the blue line depth in free agency as well for relatively low cost, you would imagine. But the top priority has to be addressing that top six and addressing some of the issues they had on the wing in terms of the personnel they didn't have at key times in the year last year.
What does it say to you, Batch, that the two unrestricted free agents, the, you know, high-profile unrestricted free agents that they've brought back and re-signed, have clearly left money on the table in order to come back to the Vancouver Canucks? That's not something we've traditionally seen in this market, going back to the Jim Benning days. What does that tell you about just how much this management group has earned the trust of this group of players?
Yeah, I think it's huge, and this is what winning does, and it's been a while since we've been able to talk about things like this, you know, but you can remember guys taking hometown discounts, you know, Alex Burrows most notably, mm-hmm. back in a previous era where this team was a contender, and that's the benefit you get of being a good team playing in a market like Vancouver. When things are going poorly, you know, it's harder to get guys to come here. And that's why we saw some of the contracts that we saw through the Benning era that ultimately didn't work out. And, you know, I've seen a lot of people sort of comparing the Jay Beagle contract to the Teddy Bluger contract in the past 24 hours and talking about sort of that's the difference between the two management groups. But I think it's also more notably the difference between the situation that those management groups were operating under, which is when you're a good team, then guys are going to want to come and they're going to be more willing to take pay cuts and they're going to be more willing to find a way to figure things out so they can stay when they've been in a good environment. So hopefully for Vancouver, that extends to free agency as well in terms of convincing guys to come here, because we know that players talk throughout the league. And if there have been good noises coming out of the Vancouver dressing room, that won't go unnoticed by players elsewhere. And I think Rick Tocchet, you know, commands a lot of respect around the league as a head coach too. And Rutherford and Alvin will as well for the moves that they've made to help turn this team around. So, you know, it's huge in terms of being able to bring back those guys on team-friendly deals, but it could also be huge in terms of your chances to win some of these, you know, high leverage, I guess, as Drance would say, sweepstakes for free agents, where there's multiple teams offering big money, and what's going to make the difference between whether, you know, a guy like Jake Gensel chooses you or chooses someone else. It might be the opportunity he's going to have to win immediately, and that's something the Canucks can offer now that we can't say they've been able to offer prior to this offseason.
Batch, I'm sitting here nodding along to your great take, and then I had to stop for a second and think, wait a minute, did he just sell me on a defense of Jim Benning?
Hey, there you go.
See, I'm not doing it. I'm not doing it, Batch.
I'm not the
How dare you? How dare you try and sneak that in without comment? No, you know what, though? You did make me think about the one chance that the Canucks had to operate as a good team in the Benning era in the summer of 2020, right? Or the fall of 2020, right? Where yeah. COVID budgetary stuff sort of stopped it. Instead, they lose everybody. And, you know, I think they've been digging out from that until really the past 18 months and arguably even then. So, you know, at the very least, it looks like the Canucks are on a track to not waste the dream season that they had in terms of getting some pretty favorable deals locked up. Do you think where the market will open on Monday, by the way, and we're going to see some you know, loose Joshua Blueger comparable sign and just be like, oh boy, the Canucks are very fortunate they're not playing in that market.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, we think these deals are great now. I think we're going to think they're fantastic and unbelievable when we see some of the money that gets thrown around on Monday and onwards. And this is generally what happens when you get a salary cap bump, is teams that didn't have flexibility before now have some. And so they want to make an impact. And oftentimes they make decisions that age very poorly. And we can look back to that offseason with, you know, Louis Erickson signing in Vancouver and Milan Lucic signing his big deal, and there were a few others too. Yeah, exactly. And how poorly basically all of those contracts aged for the teams that signed them. It wouldn't surprise me if we look back on this summer in a similar manner. So for the Canucks to avoid having to play in that sandbox is big. And another thing I want to say about, you know, sort of the Benning and Alvin, you know, eras and what we were joking about before is, you know, as much as the point I make is that they're operating in two very different situations. For Benning, that situation, for a lot of it, was self-inflicted. Yeah. And for Alvin and Rutherford, the situation that they're in is one that they deserve credit for. So, you know, as much as you can say, oh, you know, Benning was given a tough hand because the team was not very good, he had a big part to play in making the team not very good. Whereas you can look at Alvin and Rutherford and say, yeah, they get to play in a more favorable situation because the team is good, but they are big factors in terms of why the team is good as well. So, you know, it's not just a situational thing. It's putting yourself in that situation to allow you to benefit and, you know, sort of reap what you've sown over the last 18 months in the case of Alvin and Rutherford.
Yeah. Isn't it funny how, despite inheriting a much worse situation, we've never once heard, well, the situation we inherited from Alvin or Rutherford.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
like, doesn't that
that's
speak
your
volumes?
Job though?
No, but yeah, like, I remember how much it was just like the situation we inherited, the situation we inherited, the situation. And it was like, I don't know. It looks like you inherited a pretty good team. You guys made the playoffs the next year and won your division.
Yeah. Well, I mean, part of that is how well things have gone for Alvin and Rutherford. Like, they haven't had to fall back on that because they did turn things around and do a good job. And
but it took a while. They were getting crushed for 18 months.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. But they did what they thought was best, right? They stuck to their guns in spite of, you know, mass criticism from fan bases and from the media, or from the fan base.
Certainly from me
as well. About, well, yeah, not just you, but I was definitely thinking you for sure. But they stuck to their guns. They did what they thought was right, and they have been vindicated with how things have turned around. And now that you've done that work and put yourself in this situation, then you get to sort of bathe in the praise of an adoring fan base, and you get to benefit from that situation by being able to make great moves like they've made and bring in Joshua back at a good number like this. But again, like, much like we're talking about this in sort of the greater picture of, you know, you put in the work and then you can reap the rewards afterwards. Are we sitting here talking about them extending Dakota Joshua if they're not able to pull off that tremendous trade to move off the Mikheyev money yesterday? Like, probably not. So, you know, it's the work that they've put in and the good things they've been able to do that have put them in a situation now where it's I used to always talk about this, about when the Canucks were struggling, it was like a snowball rolling downhill that would turn into an avalanche. And bad decisions would compound and things would get poorly, and then they'd make another bad decision to try and fix them and things would get worse. Well, now the snowball is rolling the other way, where you make a good decision and it opens up opportunities for you to make another good decision, and then things go better for you. And guess what? There's even more opportunity. So it's exciting to be following a team that has turned that around, and now we can look forward to free agency and be excited about the opportunities that this management group can try and take advantage of with the cap space they have on Monday and beyond.
Yeah, it's certainly a different feeling. Not only do they have that cap space to work with, but as you said, reasons for fans to be excited about what this team is going to do with it. Batch, thank you for doing this. I look forward to you putting up with Drance for a few days next week on the show.
I don't, but that's fine. thanks for taking the time off, so I got dragged in.
I'm on with Halford in the morning, so I'm working.
Oh, okay.
It's a good trade for me. Sunny disposition of Mike Halford. Very good.
It's a good trade for you, but you have to wake up at 5 in the
that's
morning
true.
Or whatever it is.
That's
so,
true.
You know, I'll take the nooner with Drancer. I'm not a morning person.
You should definitely tell Bruff that he wouldn't last a moment in the asylum that raised you.
Halford, you mean?
No, Bruff.
Oh, Bruff, I see. Okay.
Well, because if Bruff had to host with me.
That's true.
Why would you tell Halford? Halford would be like, that's fine, I love everybody. I'm Mike Halford.
All right, Batch, thanks for doing this. We'll talk soon.
Sounds good. Thanks, boys.
Yeah. By the way, of course, the draft is tomorrow, but tonight.
High praise for Jim Benning and Ilya Mikheyev from Brendan Batchelor. Shocking stuff from our guy.
Thank you, Jim. Brendan Batchelor, bringing it back. Tonight at the Sphere in Vegas, the NHL Awards, and of course, of interest most for Canucks fans is, in all likelihood, the overwhelming favorite to take home the Norris Trophy is, of course, Quinn Hughes. So it would be pretty stunning if he did not win the Norris after his season. That gets going at 4 o'clock Pacific. You can see it on Sportsnet. So I don't want to, like, react to him winning the Norris because it's not official yet. We'll be able to do that on the show tomorrow, but a very good chance that the Canucks have their first Norris winner in franchise history after the award show tonight.
He closed the season minus 500 to win.
Yeah.
So
it would be, I mean, I don't want to jinx it, but it would be pretty stunning.
A miscarriage of justice.
It really would.
It really would. You're right.
People are like really... Really, relitigating the Jim Benning era now.
Who, Canucks fans?
I know. The appetite to do so is just endless.
Thanks, Batch.
Batch got it started.
Let's keep it to a thank you, Batch.
All right. Lots more to discuss about the Canucks and now how they are positioned going into free agency, going into the draft tomorrow as well. So get your text in 650-650 to the Dunbar Lumber text line. By the way.
Really quickly.
Go ahead.
One text in. Benning inherited a way, way bigger disaster than Alvin inherited. Please tell me Drance knows this. All I know is that you're gullible and bought the lies that were told to you.
Okay. NHL draft coverage on Sportsnet 650 is brought to you by Oxygen Yoga and Fitness, not your typical yoga studio. More Canucks talk on the way here on Sportsnet 650.